Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. In fact, wherever you are on planet Earth, welcome to the weekend. It's a Saturday, the 8th of December, 2018. My name is Martin Lee, and welcome to your Saturday special. Today, we're joined by a very special guest. Nuve are the global leader in V2G technology. You can date vehicle to grid back a long way, perhaps to 1996 when the technology was really defined, offering high power charging and grid services, optimizing unused and renewable energy. And as regular listeners know, I'm slightly obsessed with vehicle to grid and vehicle to home as well, V2G and V2H. There's something, this has a future, and this is a useful technology on so many different levels. I think you're going to love today's interview. As always, thank you to MyEV.com for helping make this show. MyEV.com is the world's first marketplace all about EVs. Totally free. It simplifies buying and selling. And along the way, talking about getting something for nothing, you can learn a lot about EVs. Click on the research section of MyEV.com. And before we get started today, welcome to two brand new patrons of the show. A brand new producer, Amber. Thank you, Amber. Amber Tucker is a new producer and exec producer. Executive producer Bob Muir. Well, Bob Muir has signed up at the $10 a month level, which is basically a super posh coffee once a month. And it's helping to spread the word about EVs to thousands of people around the world every day. If you don't fancy making your own podcast, you could always try and fund this one instead. And it helps get the word out and educate more people about the benefits of not only EVs, but the ecosystem around them. And that brings me on to vehicle to grid. A fascinating interview today. I think you're going to learn a lot, be entertained along the way as well. Enjoy this one. It's with Mark. Now, Mark Trahon is the EVP of marketing at Nuve. And it was a real pleasure to welcome Mark to the EV News Daily studio.
Yes, correct, Martin. Okay. Nice to be here. Thank you.
And in French, it would be
Trahon.
Trahon.
That's more complicated.
I said I'd start by just apologising for getting your name massively wrong with my English accent. And the company is?
So the company is Nuve.
Okay, so people listening right now that might not have heard of Nuve, what do you do?
So Nuve is a San Diego-based company. Initially, we're using technology that was developed over quite a few years now from a professor in Delaware called Professor Kempton, who was at the University of Delaware and sort of defined the concept of vehicle to grid. And that concept initially was defined in 1996. That was the first papers he wrote about vehicle-to-grid. And I must say, at that time, I wasn't there, but the story is that, you know, people are very skeptical about vehicle-to-grid. It's like, you want to do what? You want to use EVs and provide service to the grid, but there's hardly any EVs on rolling on wheels anyway. But the whole concept is that you've got these batteries, which are, for most of them, parked 22, 23 hours a day, which are doing nothing. And we should use that capacity and provide services to the grid. And then that has lots of benefits behind that.
So this comes down to an overall philosophy about e-mobility, in that the cars we drive need to be thought of as energy stores rather than traditionally thinking of things that get us from A to B.
I mean, the primary use of an EV is still from getting you from A to B, but there's lots of other things we can do with that expensive battery that's inside the vehicle. And then what we do is that we take that battery, we connect it to the grid, we connect it to our software, and we make revenues for the users so that we share those revenues with the users. So in essence, the car is then cheaper for you to own as a total cost of ownership than if you had a regular EV.
So regular listeners of the podcast will hear me have said many times, I'm kind of obsessed with vehicle to grid and the possibilities. And yet there are so many people who, at the moment, it's not their priority. And we support all things EV on this podcast. But Elon Musk is probably one of the most famous names in the industry. And he has previously said vehicle to grid just won't be on his radar for such a long time. And that he's dismissed. I'm not saying he's dismissed V2G entirely, but it's something for him that he has publicly gone on record on earnings calls and things to say, not for me, don't want to think about it right now. So it's kind of interesting. And yet, even so, I'm still obsessed with the technology. It just seems to me that this can solve so many of our problems in terms of storing energy and using it at a time when is most appropriate. Are you coming up against that, people being excited about it or still being skeptical about it?
Well, of course, you get people excited. I mean, our first customers were so excited about it that just wanted it. But you also get lots of skeptics around. Is it going to destroy my battery? You know, is this, can I use it with my Tesla? No, today you cannot do vehicle to grid with your Tesla. But the reality is that if we want all the EVs to be plugged in and charging on the grid, if you want the grid, it will minimize the amount of money we need to spend on strengthening the grid, then we need the EVs to play with the grid. And that's where, if you look at California, where a lot of Teslas are running around, but lots of other EVs as well, we have this huge issue in California where there's too much sun and it's great. We're getting all that we can out of solar panels to charge anything we can we have. But when it gets to 4 or 5 p.m., the sun goes down, everybody goes home, air conditionings turn on, heaters turn on, your kettle turns on. And at that time, this is where the grid needs the biggest help. This is what in California is called the duck curve, because it goes down and back up. And 13 gigawatts of energy are needed at that 5 to 6, 7 p.m. And that's a lot of energy. And if the cars could then contribute a bit or delay the charge and provide services to the grid, then we are able to put more EVs onto the grid without any pain.
One of the things that I talk to people about all the time, friends, relatives, skeptics who say to me, oh, but how long does the car last? I buy an iPhone, within 2 years, the battery doesn't work. And I have to explain to them, yeah, but the way that car batteries are built are fundamentally different. Most of them have some sort of active thermal management. And even the ones that don't, then the ones that have got all the press, say the early Nissan Leafs in Arizona, for instance, like first generation product in the hottest place possible, and the batteries didn't cope very well. But for the large part, these batteries are pretty resilient, aren't they?
They are and they are not. So you're right. The lithium ion problem with the technology is that you don't want a battery that's either too hot, and that can occur in the hot weather or even when you're fast charging it a lot if it doesn't have a good cooling system. And then the other issues is you don't want to be throttling the top 5% and the bottom, say, 20%. But if you stay in the mid-range of a battery, you're taking good care of it. We at Nuvve, we work very closely up front with the car makers to make sure that we're handling their batteries in the correct zones. So we've done these studies up front with them. We've published studies with Honda and with other manufacturers, which show the degradation linked to vehicle to grid is very minimal and stays within the warranty of the manufacturer. And that's what we've got to make sure is always the case. So we work diligently on that.
So where in the world is vehicle to grid happening at the moment? Because lots of people will be listening right now going, well, this is great, but physically, my local power authority are just not set up for it. So where are we doing it already?
So we've been, the first place we did it was in Delaware. So we did on a big utility in the U.S. called the PJM. That was in 2009. We were providing a very complex service to them. It's called frequency regulation. But it's a complex service for the grid that pays well. We're doing it now in Denmark. We've been operating Denmark for over 2 years now. And we've showed a significant amount of revenue out of these cars in Denmark. And that revenue can then be shared with the owners. And that can be through free electricity to drive, for example, free chargers. It's harder to give a check back to people. They have to pay taxes on that. So we'd rather give them as much incentives in the whole package as we can. So we're coming to the UK now. So we're starting operations in the UK. We've got a great project here with a great London area, GLA and TfL, to equip some of their fleets with bi-directional V2G chargers. So the big thing is that if you want to get the maximum out of V2G, it needs to be bi-directional. So that's where some manufacturers already have invested in bi-directional cars.
Now, my wife will say to me, for instance, of an evening, because we have ours to come on between 1 and 5, 1 and 6 o'clock in the morning to charge the car. And she'll sometimes say to me, oh, I didn't bother plugging it in today because I got 80% and I've got a couple of errands to run tomorrow. So if you see the car's not charged, don't worry about it. But I know that if I started talking to her, and then, so that's fine, that makes sense to her. If I started talking about, but energy will come out of the car when it's needed and then maybe go back in when the grid is either greener or cheaper, that would be another level of her thinking about, oh, this is the problem that I just don't need. So I'm guessing you probably have some smart solutions to ensure people don't get in their car in the morning and it's got no battery.
That's totally right. And then the number one has to be, this car is for driving. So we always take care of the driver first. So we have a little application on your iPhone, on your Android phone, where you let us know how many miles you want to drive tomorrow. And then For some people, it's always the same. For others, it varies. Most people, you know, we're very predictable as humans. We do always the same thing every day. And so we managed that to make sure that in the morning you have the charge you want or at the time you want to drive. But the key thing is that you have to educate everybody, even if you have 80% charge, just plug in, because we might use some of that energy to maybe for your house, we'll lower your electricity bill at the time where electricity is expensive. So we'll push back out into your house so your toaster can or other appliances can be powered by the car. We need the drivers there to collaborate a little bit so we can do some planning. Then afterwards, we do also some statistic planning. And you can do, you know, if you have an unplanned trip, for example, you can press an emergency charge button. Our chargers are quite powerful, usually at least 10 kilowatts, so we can charge your car quite fast. And you can set a minimum level. So that minimum level might be, you know, in case I need to go fetch my kid, in case, you know, I need to take granny to hospital. There might be some other emergencies that you want to make sure you always have a minimal level of battery there.
And you must be working in this space that is changing day by day at the moment, where we have a 22 kilowatt hour Renault Zoe, but actually the next generation of cars coming out, things like the Hyundai Kona with its 64 kilowatt hour battery and the Kia e-Niro, even the Kia Soul EV announced at the LA Auto Show last week, 64 kilowatt hour battery. All of a sudden, I mean, because Tesla have always been there with big batteries, but all of a sudden there's now another range of cars that haven't got small batteries. That's a lot of storage. And so the idea of me saying, actually, I can hand over 10% of my battery. With a small battery, it's a bit of a concern. But with these new generation cars, not a problem at all. So you are moving in a market where the batteries are kind of on your side, as it were. So does that make your life easier?
I think what's really interesting about the cars that have bigger batteries, we of course provide services. But if you're bi-directional, you can provide service for a long time because you push back electricity in and out. But over time, I think the size of the battery is going to maybe change how we charge. So today you see a big incentive to put chargers along highways, along streets. And I think that's going to be less of an emergency going forward because we're going to have bigger batteries. So we're going to charge at home. We're going to charge at work. So I think 80, 90% of charges, and that might be already the case if you look at the statistics, are going to be charging at home, charging at work. And we need to balance both. So the charge at work is very important. We use a solar energy so we can charge at work. And then at night, we have to make sure we don't all charge at 7 p.m., which is the worst time, and we push it out. So it's a good thing that you and your wife start pushing that charge into the night. You're ahead of the curve there.
The power grid as we know it, a Victorian invention of making electricity in one place and shipping it to all of us, moving to an idea that I can get my head around pretty easily, which is of microgrids, and we all do things like that. But for a lot of people, that's a big step in their mind to take. It's like it's a whole behavioural shift. It's trusting that they don't just turn on their plug socket and this magical electricity is there, is made by someone in a power plant somewhere in the country and it just arrives, which is what they've been used to for 100 years. So is there work to do in convincing people actually we don't need to upgrade the grid because we're going to have this energy storage system in the driveway? But is it like a trust issue with people that it's, you know, the lights are going to come on, don't worry?
No, you're right. And you bring the notion of trust and it's very interesting because on one sense, you know, some people have started to be wanting to be autonomous about energy. So they want their house, their solar panel, their car, and they don't want to plug into the grid. That's fine, but we can't all become Robinson Crusoes. So we need a notion of microgrid, which we call a microgrid, but in reality, these grids will probably be a few million people set together. And you're going to see this today in developing countries. In developing countries, they're not going to have the money to go put, you know, big power lines all across the country. So we're going to have local pockets, and then you go to the next city, and there might be a different grid. But those grids need to be sustainable. They need to be resilient. We need to have batteries there. We provide buffer for renewables. So we live at this point in life, which is really interesting. We've got renewable energy becoming stronger and stronger onto the grids. And that renewable energy is intermittent in itself. We've got an increased number of EVs on the road that need to be supported. And at the same time, we have what we call a digitization of the electric grid. So there's more and more sensors out there. We know what's going on. And because of, you know, the IoT and the Internet of Things, we're now able to sense everywhere what's going on, pull up the information, take a centralized decision process, and then pilot remotely what needs to happen. So we're in a very interesting times where these grids are going to be now more autonomous, but not at the house level, probably at, you know, 100,000, million people type level.
You talk about taking jumps in technology. So whereas with many remote communities in Africa, for instance, they never got landlines because it would have been too expensive, they jumped straight from having no telephone to mobile phones. So could a similar thing happen where at the moment everyone's saying, oh, well, you know, in developing countries when they start getting EVs and then all of a sudden you're going to have these big dirty power plants to power them. There would be a similar jump in technology for these communities, so they go from having no EVs to actually a very sophisticated solution because maybe we've done the hard work first, maybe?
Yeah, there's some of that, certainly. So we're looking at some projects right now with the United Nations Development Agency, which we'll announce in the new year, which are exactly that, looking at places like Africa, Southeast Asia, where we can actually help the communities there with EVs. We've been announcing a partnership as well in the Philippines with Meralco to be able to do that. And those are things that I think will bring this technology forward into those countries. But even when you look at, you know, existing infrastructure, you look at London and you talk to UKPN and then you look at how you want to bring more electricity into a super dense area today, it's difficult. It's difficult to install new substations in London. We need to share that energy and make sure at the right given time is where it's needed.
I think people don't realize how big car batteries are because people are quite interested in home storage at the moment. And you can buy maybe a 4 or a 5 kilowatt hour battery. If you go Tesla, then you go 14. But actually, even the smallest of EVs dwarf all of the home storage solutions.
You're totally right. And when you look at, you know, the what happened with vehicle to grid back when Fukushima disaster happened in Japan, so that was in 2011, if I'm not wrong, the grid went black. And then they realized we have all these cars running around with big batteries and we can't even power home again. So they use Nissan Leafs, Mitsubishis as well, invested in this technology to be able to push out the energy. So it was called vehicle to home. And with one Nissan Leaf with that time had a 24 kilowatt hour battery, you can power one Japanese home for probably a few days and probably, you know, 10, 15 homes for a few hours. So there's a lot of energy and power inside those cars, and it can be certainly used to power up houses.
There is an interesting shift happening with, in the UK, we're all getting smart meters over the next few years. And there's an interesting shift happening where it's not until you, I think, get a smart meter and get an EV together, and maybe then you've also got some PV on the roof and things, that you actually pay attention to your daily usage. And when you do, we were thinking, well, there's only the two of us, there's my wife and I, and we're out at work all day. We'll use maybe 4 to 5 kilowatt hours. You know, we're in a very temperate climate, so we haven't got an HVAC system and air conditioning and heating. So, and our heating is gas at the moment, which isn't ideal. So we'll use 4 to 5 kilowatt hours a day, which is, by many standards, really small. Mm. So actually, using a little bit from the car between 5 and 8 p.m. or 5 and 9 when it's not that much, really. It seems like a tiny amount.
It's not that much, and then it all depends what your rates and your tariffs are at home. So you're going to have some countries which, and it's this case here in the UK, if you're an industrial consumer between 4 and 7, you're going to have increased rates and it's going to be more expensive. But in certain countries, you need to lower your peak. So for example, in California, companies will have a peak wherever it is in the day, and that'll set their price point for the rest of the month. So it becomes super important to bring those peaks down. And that's where the type of services we do, for example, in California might be different from Denmark, might be different from the UK, because we have to adjust vehicle to grid to what is the rate in those countries where we can help, what are the energy markets we can access. And so it's going to be sort of a sandwich of different services where you go.
You mentioned about chargers as well. I figured that Nuvve was mainly a software company and doing all the clever thinking behind the hardware, but do you do both as well then?
So we don't manufacture hardware ourselves. However, at this early stage in the technology, we have to be involved with the development, the manufacturing, make sure they have the right specs. And up to now, most of the chargers we've been using have been really small production levels. So it makes them expensive. They're still a bit big and clunky. And the next generation we'll see in 2019 and 2020 are going to be smaller chargers, easier to put on the wall. And those are the developments we're looking forward to. Now, we're giving specs out to the manufacturers. We include in our offers the chargers, so we can also go out and purchase the chargers. But we're not a maker of chargers as sorts. You know, think about, you know, British Telecom wants to roll out mobile phones. They need to buy phones in order to roll out their service.
I'm sure you work with so many people whose names you cannot say because of certain agreements, but we can say Toyota in Japan, and you recently have a project with them and Chubu Electric Power, if that's how I say their name. Can you tell us more about that project that's ongoing?
Yeah, so we have the largest investors inside Nuvi are EDF, so same company, Electricité de France, as EDF here in the UK. And the other company is Toyota Tsusho, which is actually an investment company, happens to have, you know, loosely linked to the bigger Toyota group, but then an investment company and a trading company. And they have helped us put together a project with the Minister of Industry in Japan, and as well Chubu Electric, was a big utility there. And it's been interesting because up to now, Japan was very reticent on vehicle-to-grid. And through this type of project, they've opened some funding and some research. So we certainly hope to be able to bring vehicle-to-grid to Japan, where there's lots of EVs on the road there as well.
It seems to me like you are almost a ringleader in a lot of this, because you have to talk. There are so many different parts of the puzzle that you need to bring together, from the car makers to local. It seems like such a huge project, but somebody has to get them all talking to each other, because the car makers off their own back don't necessarily need to start going to local power generation because that's just not their business. They need to make money out of their cars. So that seems like a huge challenge in bringing all of those different people together. And even from the car manufacturer's point of view, what's in it for them, for instance, for you to say, at the moment, V2G, not possible with many of the cars that you buy. Like, say, if you have a Tesla, you can't do it. But what's in it for them to go, actually, you're right, let's go with this technology?
On one side, there's the benefit for any car manufacturer that we're going to lower the total cost of ownership. So you could see a future where if you're a manufacturer and you're not doing V2G, you would be a disadvantage sales price-wise compared to someone else that is. And so that's the first argument. The other one, of course, is that eventually, everybody's going to go there, maybe through regulation or others. So we're very closely engaged with regulation bodies because we need to open up the vehicle to grid arena as well on the regulation side. It's complex because today you need to empower a user at home, the consumer, the guy that owns the battery, and you need to allow him to access markets. And in order to do that, you have to convince everybody within the European Union, within the local, you know, Ofgem, and then also, you know, Her Majesty's Revenue Service here in the UK, that this consumer needs to be allowed to participate on markets. He can't be overtaxed at the or over-tariffed at the retail level, when a lot of what we do is we compete with power plants at the wholesale level, which have a totally different cost structure. And so I think, you know, we're going to bring to car manufacturers the ability to access markets that they would never even be able to do beforehand. And I think that's revolutionary today. And for sure, a lot of people need to be convinced of it, the car manufacturers, the regulators. But it looks like everybody's starting to get on board now. We've got several manufacturers on board and more are talking about it. And I think eventually everybody will go there because there won't be any other choice.
Even down to the practical level of the plug, the connector, obviously CHAdeMO or CHAdeMO is bidirectional. The current Type 2 CCS combo, not. Can things be changed so that the existing technology can, or do we need new connectors for the cars?
You remember the days where we all had different mobile phones, and what phone do you have? Can I use your charger? It doesn't work. And it's the same now with cars, and I think it's starting to change. We're really glad that CHAdeMO today has the bidirectionally inside the protocol. CCS is promising us they're going to have it, and hopefully 2019, 2020, they're certainly behind CHAdeMO on that front. So that's a concern, because that doesn't push the CCS manufacturers to then go bidirectional early on. But I think we're seeing enough interest from OEMs directly that that will happen. We at Nuvi would like to be as close to standards as possible. It's like today our solution has some proprietary protocols in it, and that's because nothing else exists. And we were the first ones to do it. But over time, there'll be some standard protocols that support all the amount of information we need to transit. Because lots of information you actually want to know from the car in order to take the right decision on what that car should do next. So we need to understand all that information, and those protocols are key to getting the information back to our software system.
When can I? You're going to hate this question. When do you think someone like me would be able to participate in that? How far away are we?
I don't think we're far away at all, Martin. I think the when I look at what we're doing today in terms of contracts, we're starting with commercial fleets because it's much easier today to discuss with a commercial fleet on how do we put vehicle to grid on your parking lot. You're going to put, you know, 10 of them or whatever your vans are. We also like vehicles that are plugged in a lot because that's where you make the maximum revenues on markets, of course. So, for example, a taxi is not always the ideal for vehicle to grid because they'll be running around a lot and some taxis actually switch drivers as soon as they stop, right? So, but I think the individual at home is a really key thing for vehicle to grid because so many people are going to be charging at home. And I think within the next year or so, we'll start, as soon as we've got the right chargers for the home. So, for example, in the UK, you only have single phase at home. So I can't put a three-phase charger. It's going to, the cost of upgrade to you is going to be a bit too big. But you go to other countries like the Netherlands or Denmark, everybody's got three-phase at home. And there's no reason we can't start putting quite powerful chargers at home. And then in the UK and France, for example, which are, you know, one-phase countries, I think those offers will come as soon as we all have good chargers we can put out there.
I'd love a 22-kilowatt charger at home. That'd be fantastic. So you're in Denmark and France, the UK and the US. You've certainly got your work cut out over the next year. If people want to find out more about Nuvve, how can they find out more? Is there social media they can follow, a website they can go to?
So, of course, you know, we're on Twitter, we're on LinkedIn, we have a web page as well that we just revamped. And we are starting to put vehicle-to-grid chargers in many countries around the world. And that's part of very often convincing everybody and showing the route forward. So, you're welcome to contact us at any time.
Wonderful. I'm sure people will follow you up on that and have a look at what it's all about. And if they're anything like me, that'll be it'll be a big part of owning an EV in the future. Maybe not. The next couple of months, but the next couple of years, we're really looking forward to it. Is there anything else that you want to kind of add to this? If people are listening around the world right now, they can find out about the company or anything else that you're working on that you want to kind of add to this?
Oh, I think look out for a vehicle to grid coming your way. Make sure you're buying bi-directional cars to get the maximum out of your EV in the next few years. And check us out at Nuvve.com.
Well, thank you very much, Mark, for joining us on today's show on EV News Daily. Another Saturday special, another fascinating interview, and another show only possible because of the patrons of this program. 128 of them on patreon.com/EV News Daily. That is patreon.com/EV News Daily. It may be a small amount. I mean, look, any amount is a big amount, and I'm enormously grateful. Thank you so much for every single dollar or five or ten, because it means we can make this show and bring this information to thousands of people around the world as podcasts or YouTube audio. But what might seem like a few bucks here and there, actually, when you add it all together, helps pay for streaming, helps pay for hosting, helps get me around to talk to these people as well and bring you this information. So I'm just enormously grateful. Thank you very much. We'll say hello and thank you to everyone tomorrow on the show with also the answers to your questions of the week as well, and a brand new question, as we always do on a Sunday. In the meantime, there are 319 episodes of the show online for free from the places you get podcasts from. If you subscribe, you get the show first and free and automatically, and if in return, you can leave a tiny little review, a little star rating. It really would mean the world to me. Thank you very much for listening today. Join us for question of the week tomorrow, your bit of the show, and I think you're going to love that one as well. In the meantime, on the show, socials, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter, search EV News Daily. Have a wonderful day, and I'll catch you tomorrow.